It's time for Let's Talk Legal with your host, Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins from the law firm of Harvell & Collins. If you've got a legal question, they can give you the answer. Call now, 1-800-818-2255, and let's talk legal.
Let's Talk Legal with Harvell & Collins, attorneys at law, the right advice at the right time, and Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins with us. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning, Ben.
Morning, Ben.
All right, what are we talking about today?
Ben, let's talk about undue influence and the effects of that legal circumstance when it comes to the enforceability of legal documents. This can frame up in any number of ways. Wes is going to talk about the, if you will, kind of the litigation aspects of these issues. But to give some factual background, Ben, you know, there are many times that folks of advanced age will rely on a relative, many times a son or a daughter, sometimes a granddaughter, sometimes a neighbor or friend,
right,
who will exert influence over their elder loved one. And, of course, sometimes this is, as one would anticipate, this is just, you know, very innocent and very straightforward, and that it does not amount to undue influence. They just simply are assisting. They are a sounding board,
right,
for someone who is, you know, in their 90s and who just needs someone to give them some assurance that the documents that they're signing are appropriate and that they meet the desire and the objectives of the elder person. Now, we are confronted with these facts quite often, Ben, and we as lawyers try to make sure that the file reflects that the decisions that are being made are in fact the decision of the principal. And we do this by meeting with the principal independently, by meeting with them on numerous occasions, more than one time, again, independently.
Right.
The person who is assisting them can bring them to the appointment, can make the appointment over the telephone, which is usually how appointments are made. But we like for them to sit out in the lobby and so that we can talk to the principal independently and without any added pressure from the person who is assisting them. This happens frequently, as I have said, and it frames up usually with a child, as I say, or grandchild calling, making the appointment, and then immediately coming into the appointment with the grandmother and then telling the lawyer, you know, this is what grandmother wants. This is how she wants her will to be drafted. She wants to deed the property to me, et cetera, et cetera. Okay. And
right,
so immediately the lawyer, you know, after experience such as we have, we're like, okay, well, we're going to need to meet with your grandmother independently and on a couple of different occasions so as to verify that this is in fact what she is desiring, and then we need to go about the task of doing that.
But I would imagine sometimes the principal there is kind of nervous about doing that, about meeting independently.
About meeting independently? Sometimes, but most of the times they're okay with that, and sometimes there's great relief when they finally are independent and there is no one in the four corners of the room other than the principal and the lawyer. They're able to really open up and say, well, you know, Mr. Harvell, this is what's really happening. They don't use that language usually, but they begin to really open up because they know that no one is listening now to what they're saying. So these are the kinds of procedures that we have in place in our office. Now, many times the procedures that we have in our office are not the facts. Documents are presented to folks at their home, while they're in the hospital, while they're at the hospice, wherever the case might be. And that's, of course, a different set of facts. And we have a lot of cases that that end up going the litigation route as a result of those kinds of circumstances.
Okay. All right. Again, undue influence. What happens if you discover that?
Right, Ben. So this can, you know, be a will. This could be a deed. This could be a contract. This could be a power of attorney. you know, it really could be any type of legal document that's being, you know, placed in front of someone.
But often it sounds like it's a transfer of some sort.
Yeah, transfer obviously is dealing with, you know, usually things, real property, personal property, so that the person exerting the influence that may be undue is benefiting financially from that, or is putting themselves in a position such as being appointed attorney in fact under a power of attorney so that they can go access accounts and do these type things. So, you know, it could be any of these type documents. And, you know, where these type cases end up on my desk at Harvell and Collins as the lead litigation attorney is, you know, a lot of times the folks who sign these documents are elderly. They're maybe in the last days or weeks or months of their life. Sometimes they're not, depending on the circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times you see situations where maybe a caregiver was the influencer, or maybe a child was the influencer who was living close to the parent, and maybe even living with the parent, and maybe even kind of blocking access to the parent.
Right.
Not letting others, you know, talk to the parent about just things, you know, no private conversation. Like if it's interesting, I see this all the time where, let's say the child caregiver is living in the home. Well, if one of the other children visits the home, the child caregiver is always hovering, is always there.
Right.
You
right.
never are able to get to the parent one-on-one. If you call the parent from, you know, you live out of state and you call the parent's never available to talk on the phone one-on-one, or it's always a three-way conversation with the caregiver child. You know, so these kind of things, facts start not smelling just right, if you know what I mean.
Right.
You know, the other things that we look at as it relates to undue influence would be, was there an existing estate plan or an existing intent that seemed to be altered by this document that we're questioning? Was there an old will or an estate plan of some sort, maybe a trust, whatever it may be, leaving the estate, let's say, equally to the two or three kids? And now all of a sudden, everything goes to this one child. And that was never disclosed to the rest of the family. No one knew anything about it, but we didn't learn about it until the person passed away.
Yeah.
And then we're having to deal with it at that point in time.
I can see how a lot of these arrangements can start in a benign way. I mean, it's somebody, it's a child that lives close to the person that needs the care.
Right.
And
right.
so they become the one who is taking care of them. And then the kind of resentment grows that they are the one that's there all the time and somebody else wants to be there too. So.
Yep. But sometimes they're there officiously. They're pushing themselves into the situation. They are saying, no, I'll take care of you. I'll take care of you. Just let me do it. Okay. But they're doing that for maybe some ulterior purpose of maybe influencing the person.
Right.
So it is a slippery slope. It's an interesting dynamic, I think, psychologically. But also, you know, when you're dealing with someone who's elderly, well, folks who are elderly are usually more subject to undue influence than, you know, the average 50-year-old, for example.
Right.
They become more dependent on people around them, obviously. I think that they want to usually please people that are around them more than maybe they did in their younger years. They don't want confrontation. They're sometimes put in a position where there are threats that are made, such as, well, if you don't do this, I just can't take care of you anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You know, those kind of things. So, you know, Cecil and I see all types. We see all kinds. We deal with so many issues for the elderly. You know, we see these in all flavors and colors. So what he described, Mr. Harvell Cecil here, with regard to the process that we go through in our office, really is such a tremendous benefit to the family, to meet with the attorney, to have an independent one-on-one conversation with the attorney, for the attorney to be able to talk with the client without the possibility of influence from someone sitting right next to the person.
Mm-hmm.
The attorney's able to act in that neutral and very strong way to cut through, you know, the noise, so to speak.
Right, right.
And, you know, that in many cases allows the person who is signing the document to really get down on paper, on their documents, on their legal documents, what they really want. And it saves a lot of time and effort and money, as it relates to, let me add one more thing. Time,
right.
Effort, money, and heartache within the family.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah.
And strife within the family, as it relates to maybe documents that are questionable that come up, you know, at a later date. So that process is very important. You know, printing documents off the internet and putting in front of mom or dad or those kind of things,
mm-hmm.
you're just asking for trouble with regard to that. Because when you go to a quality attorney, the attorney is going to go through this process and is going to, and the result of that is going to be what?
Right.
The true intent of the mm-hmm. person who's signing the documents.
All right. We'll have more to come in a moment here on Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins. If you would like to give us a call, you can do that at 800-818-2255, 247-7282, and 353-4674. Hey, welcome back here on Coastal Daybreak here on the Talk Station, FM 107 and AM 1240, and thanks for joining us here today. Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins, of course, with us from Harvell and Collins Attorneys at Law. We're talking about undue influence and that slippery slope.
One comment here, Ben, an experienced lawyer, you know, we know the elements, mm-hmm. if you will,
right,
of what makes a person stand the test of capacity. And of course, when you're in these independent meetings with the principal, 90-year-old, maybe mm-hmm. younger, but suffering from a disease process, let's say, you know, the question is, well, tell me about your family.
Mm-hmm.
You know, tell me about your children. And now let's see whether or not they're able to tell us mm-hmm. about their children.
Right.
And if they have
right.
possibly a child who has died with children, this is not unusual,
mm-hmm.
unfortunately.
Sure.
For 90-year-olds, they had 3 children originally, mm-hmm. but they've lost a child along the way. That child then now has children. And they tell you about this. The next question is, well, tell me about where you live. Tell me about your home. Where is it? You know, and they begin to tell you about their property.
Mm-hmm.
And well, do you have do you have a piece of land in addition to the property? They're able to begin to tell you about their property. And then finally, you know, well, where do you bank? Where's your money?
Mm-hmm.
You know, these questions do not have to be answered. We need to remember, we've talked about this on the program before. They do not have to be answered perfectly.
Right.
That is not the legal standard.
Yeah.
That folks know to the dime where all of their money happens to be.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, it's very typical of the elderly to not really completely appreciate they're conservative.
Yes, right.
You know, and they'll tell you, well, at the bank, I think I've got $30,000 or $40,000 in my savings account. Well, come to find out, they've got $130,000 or $140,000
yeah.
in their savings account. This is okay.
Mm-hmm.
You do not have to know to the dime what your money's happened to be. You have to generally know the nature of your estate. And then lastly, then, you know, how would you like for these assets to go if anything happened to you, Mr.
Mm-hmm.
Jones? So the questions are very generalized, and after and as the answers begin to come forward, the lawyer with experience is going to be able to discern whether or not this person is going to meet the standards for capacity.
So, and again, this is something that helps to develop a plan. So then you start to see, I would imagine, in your relationships with this client, you may start to see red flags come up, right?
Yeah, that's right. You know, we were talking about, you know, the undue influence. Certainly, you know, having the private conversation is very important. And what Cecil has done is, you know, he's kind of segued now into the lack of capacity, which mm-hmm. is really you know, part and parcel really of undue influence as well, because someone who has maybe diminished capacity is going to be much more likely to be subject to undue influence.
Right.
But just about in every case, when we deal with the litigation side of documents that are signed under questionable circumstances, such as what we've described, we don't have just a claim of undue influence. We also have a claim of lack of capacity,
mm-hmm.
Especially for folks who are elderly. Usually the facts are going to bear that out. So the way this frames up, I don't want to get too technical here. Keep it light here at 7:50 in the mm-hmm. morning for those driving to work, but still,
yeah.
The way this frames up is that if we're talking about a will, we think a will is not the actual will or the intent of the principal, the person who purportedly signed it. That falls into a specific statutory, provision relative to will caveats.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So there's a specific, type of challenge that you have to go through that, attorneys who practice in this area follow. You know, we deal with will caveats all of the time. That's a little different than your typical plaintiff versus defendant lawsuit.
Mm-hmm.
Don't want to get into all of the details with regard to that, but that is the issue that we deal with and the way that we follow through with that if we have a will that needs to be challenged. Along with that statute regarding challenging a will, when you file a will caveat, you also have a right to have the estate frozen.
Mm-hmm.
You get an order from the clerk of court that is going to freeze all the assets of the estate, even the payment of attorney's fees. So the person who may be benefiting from this undue influence isn't having their attorney's fees paid from what we're fighting over.
Right.
You know,
right.
And then all of a sudden, you know, a year later, after we've spent a lot of money on this, all the money's gone because it went to pay the lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's part of what that statute allows. So that's the will caveat way that we go through that. That's always a jury trial. And the issue in that is this document the last will and testament or is it not?
Mm-hmm.
That's the only question that the jury decides. And it's decided usually on undue influence, lack of capacity, or there could be a technical problem with the will itself. Like maybe it didn't have enough witnesses. Maybe one of the witnesses didn't actually see the person sign it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these type of things, some other type of statutory technical issue. Now, if we're talking about a deed or we're talking about a contract, or we're talking about any other type of document, maybe even execution of a power of attorney, that frames up in a different type of lawsuit. That is a plaintiff versus defendant lawsuit and with claims in it of of undue influence, lack of capacity, these type things.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just a different road that we have to go down as far as the procedural side of things.
Okay. We'll have more to come in just a moment as we take a look at the effects of undue influence on estates and the like here with Let's Talk Legal from Harvell and Collins. You can give us a call at 800-818-2255 or the local numbers
247-7282 or 353-4674.
And we'll return in just a moment. Hey, welcome back to the program. David in Newport with a question for Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins from Harvell and Collins. Hi, David. How are you?
Good morning, Ben. Thank you. I'm doing well. I hope you are.
We are. What's your question?
My question is I've allowed an individual who has property adjacent to mine to use a small tract of my property. We weren't using it. We allowed them to use it to put up a building. We don't have a written agreement for it. I was looking the other day and it's kind of trashed around the area. I don't mind them using it, but I'm thinking that maybe for a variety of reasons I might need to have a legal agreement with them. And I was wondering if it's possible to go back and require that now that they put, it's a movable building, a little shelter. Is it possible to go back and have that or require that kind of agreement to be entered into
okay.
a formal agreement
yep.
with the person?
All right.
Great question. David, right?
Yeah.
Is it David? Okay. Yeah, you absolutely need an agreement. In the event that this person uses the property for a certain amount of time, I mean, it sounds like it's been a relatively short period of time, but if it's used for 20 consecutive years, which again, it doesn't sound like we're up to that point, then the use could ripen into adverse possession, but permissive use, which is what you've done here, you permitted him to use the property, can never ripen into adverse possession. Adverse possession is a way of acquiring title in someone else's property. Okay. The issue there is that if you don't have an agreement, you know, in 20 years from now, those who owe the property, it could be you, it could be your heirs, so on and so forth, they could have a dispute about whether the right to put that building there was permissive or not. So then we spin off into court fighting over whether it was permissive or not. So yes, certainly. Now you have allowed them to put this on your property. You also have the right to have it removed from your property at any point in time. What you've essentially given these people by allowing them to put this on your property is a license. This is we think of it as a driver's license, that kind of thing. But in the world of the law, you have given someone permission, through a license to allow them to use a portion of your property, and licenses are always revocable by the one who granted the license. So you have really complete control of this situation. So to answer your question about whether you can have a document signed at this point in time, yes, you can. Whether the person who has put the building there would agree to do that, I don't know. But you have a lot of leverage over that person because you have a license. You have given them a license that you could revoke. You could require them to remove the building from your property. And in the event that they don't do that, then that's a trespass.
Now, so, David, is your issue that if they just cleaned it up, it'd be all right?
No, the issue covers some of the things that he was talking about. Mm-hmm. I started thinking about down the road, we pass away. My wife and I are both in our 60s. Who gets me years? This is a young couple. You know, then what do we do with the heir situation if he sells the property?
Right.
And then I also wondered what the length of time was as far as them coming back and saying, hey, we've been here for X number of years. This is our property now. So
20 years without color of title in the event there was a deed of some sort that purported to indicate that He had the interest to be 7 years, but
also
like
we're
20.
Out of time. But also, David, from a liability standpoint,
Documenting
that it's a permissive use will shift the liabilities on the property if anyone were to be injured or anything of that nature. So that is another thing that we could talk to you in more detail about. But Wes is absolutely right. You can keep it very simple, the written agreement, but it does need to be in writing.
Okay, and that's something that would be advisable to get an attorney to do, or
yes.
Can I just?
Yep.
Okay.
We'd be happy to help you with it. You can give us a call, set an appointment, and like to hear more about it.
Okay.
All right. Thanks, David.
Very much, gentlemen.
And that's going to wrap it up for us for today on Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins. You can reach them at 726-9050, online at harvellandcollins.com, 1107 Bridges Street in Morehead City, again, 726-9050.